Hi, I'm Leela Ainge, psychologist and researcher. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour, bringing together fascinating research, insights and real life experiences. This season, we are exploring goals with you, the Psychologically Speaking pod listeners. If you've been listening along this season, you'll know that our goal setters will be back throughout 2026, sharing their progress, their wobbles and their wins. As I've reflected on their stories together, what stands out for me isn't just what they want to do, but the psychology behind why they want it. Each of them, Jen, Rebecca and Darren, show us a different kind of motivation at work. Rebecca's goal is to write a book, and that's an approach goal. She's moving towards creativity, expression, and into her identity as a writer. There's a small avoidance element there because she wants to avoid rejection. She wants to write something that's good enough. But her challenge then is learning to replace some of those protective things and the procrastination with progress and to channel that cautious energy into those flexible actions. Jen's goal is approach-based too. Hers is about integration. She's moving towards authenticity and reclaiming time and refining boundaries and valuing herself. The tension might lie in some discomfort because she wants to step away from the guilt about remuneration and saying no around boundaries of time. Her growth point here is then recognising that boundaries aren't walls and rigid, they're really frameworks for care. Darren's goal blends both of those forces, approach and avoidance. He's approaching expansion and leadership, but avoiding overreach. He calls his ideas grandiose, and I would say that's an imposter experience that is perhaps keeping him safe and something that he reflects on himself. His work then is to transform that doubt into discipline. And he's chosen a really interesting route of systems and structures and consistency to support that ambition without shame. So together, these three stories start to illustrate for us a full psychological spectrum. You know, we've got fear and desire and structure and freedom and ambition and rest. And I thought maybe that's a mirror for you too. Because most of our goals sit somewhere between what we're reaching for and what we're running from. Psychologists call it the approach and avoidance conflict, and it's one of the reasons that goal setting can feel really exhausting sometimes. When the goal contains both push and pull, so I want to write but I don't want to fail, our brain is going to hesitate because it's trying to move us into something exciting whilst also trying to protect us. So the antidote here is always not just willpower on its own, but or curiosity. You know, we want to think about what is it that I'm truly trying to approach here and what is it that I'm really trying to avoid and naming it. Once you see both sides of that, you can start to design your goals and invite that movement in rather than expecting perfection. So there's a question of time, isn't there? I think we all love a fresh start, the blank page energy of January 1st. But I really like the fact that these three people have decided to get their goals started straight away. And I think what we can see from those conversations is that defining a goal takes a bit of time to tease out. It becomes something different, doesn't it, from being a single decision in your own head to an evolving conversation when you have that with somebody else. And that's why I'm going to be initially checking in with our guests in the first 4 weeks. I think what I'm wanting to get there is what's changed, if anything, what is working and what, if anything, needs a rethink. You can borrow this for your own resolutions. One of the main reasons that resolutions don't make it past February is possibly because they're the wrong resolution in the first place. So here's what I would do. I'd define the direction rather than the destination. And this is looking at your goal as movement. So if we look at Rebecca, she's talking about building consistency, not repeatedly talking about finishing a book. And if we look towards Darren, then again, he's looking at movement. And we discussed whether that movement was looking at doing something in as a different approach. I would keep timescales short and very flexible at the start. A 4-week cycle at the start keeps your brain engaged, and it's got a reduced pressure of performance and permanence. I think thinking of things as a check-in rather than a check-up, because if accountability feels more like a reflection or a conversation and not a reporting card, then you're going to judge yourself less harshly. Noticing patterns is probably the biggest tip that I could give you. Write down your goal, write down some of those fears, write down what's worked for you well in the past, and write down what hasn't worked well for you. Darren was very generous with exploring with us something that hadn't worked for him this year. And it helps us to think about discomfort and also what we're approaching and with what meaning. Psychologically, these small steps will help your main motivation. So that's defining your direction, keeping the timescale short, checking in rather than checking up, and noticing your own patterns. I think this is one of the threads connecting all of those stories. Jen's flexibility with boundaries, Rebecca's flexibility with time, and Darren's flexibility with structure. Each of those shows that personal growth isn't going to come from doing more, but actually from loosening the rules around how we do it. And if you start thinking about your own goals for the year ahead, try this. Set something that excites you, but also give it some air to breathe. Let it change shape and let it teach you what you actually want. There is no single right way to reach your goal, but there is your way. And that's where the psychology gets super interesting. When psychologists Edward Deci and Richard Ryan first developed self-determination theory, they found that what really sustains our motivation isn't external pressure or performance rewards. It's three psychological needs, and we've spoken about these in the previous season. So these are autonomy, competence, and relatedness. So the autonomy is that sense that I'm choosing this. The competence says I can make progress here. And the relatedness says I don't have to do it alone. When all of those three needs are met, our goals stop feeling like chores and they become more of an extension of who we are. So as you're listening here, ask yourself, does the goal that I've chosen feel chosen, or does it feel imposed? And again, you can think about that approach and avoidance sense of goals to kind of tease that out. Do you feel capable? And that's your way of noticing small wins of progress instead of just focusing straight on the destination, isn't it? And I think in most of those conversations I'd had with people around, well, who can we look to for support? With Jen, I'd encouraged her to look outside of that yoga community. Rebecca to reach out to her support systems, or she identified those herself. And again, with Darren, you know, who is there that you can ask research-based questions, and how do you connect with other artists? The motivation that we've got inside us lasts a whole lot longer than some motivation borrowed from a list or a framework in a book. So when we start to tap into those three things of autonomy, competence, and relatedness, that's going to keep us grounded for longer. The second idea I want to talk to you about is one that comes from goal adjustment theory. So this is the idea that people who can let go of unattainable goals and can re-engage with new ones end up experiencing better well-being, lower stress and healthier immune responses. So essentially, flexibility isn't flakiness and it's not failure. It's a form of resilience. So with all of those goals that we've heard so far, Rebecca will be practicing flexibility with her writing, not just can I do this on a Sunday, but how can I do this in small parts each day. Jen will be looking at flexibility around some of those boundaries, and Darren's flexibility with his systems and sales and ways of doing things will echo that as well. They'll all be learning that the power of their goal doesn't come from holding it too tightly, but from knowing when to pivot. So here's a reflection for you. Where in your goal might flexibility be the thing that keeps you moving? And what would happen if you treated that as evidence of strength rather than failure? A goal needs to be seen, I think, as a living, breathing thing. It's better when you give it a bit of space. So these theories kind of come into what I would call a reflective self-regulation. And the reason I'm doing that four-week check-in is not to test them, but to kind of understand where their rhythm is and to get them thinking about reflection. Short cycles of reflection keep our motivation alive. So you can try this one too. If you take your goal, it doesn't have to be a grand goal, but just write it down. You don't have to lock it in so firmly that it's so rigid. But I want you to give it a month and then come back and say, what did I learn through trying to achieve this goal? Did it feel easy? Did it feel forced? And what might you change before your next reflection cycle? 4 weeks is a really nice and neat way to start if you're not used to doing that. Across loads of longitudinal studies, researchers have found that people who balance autonomy, flexibility and this kind of alignment are more likely to sustain effort. So they achieve more, but they feel more fulfilled through what they're achieving too. So autonomy is going to fuel your motivation, flexibility is going to sustain it, and the identity that you've got gives it all meaning. When these three things come together, your progress is going to be really personal. And that's where the growth starts to feel like joy. Let's talk about identity. Because in my own research on imposter phenomenon, I often draw on the work of psychologists Tashvell and Turner, and their social identity theory helps to explain why confidence and belonging are so tightly connected. It shows that who we are is never built in isolation, and that we define ourselves through the groups that we belong to, our professions, our families, our communities, and by extension, our online spaces. That sense of belonging doesn't just shape how we see each other, but it also shapes how we see ourselves. When our group memberships feel valued and supported, our confidence to pursue goals grows. And when those identities feel threatened or invisible, we do shrink. So that's often what's happening beneath those imposter experiences. It's never really about a personal deficit, but that kind of disconnect around the communities. When we begin to doubt our place in the groups that we identify with, or if they don't fully recognise us or reflect us, that becomes really disjointed. So Tachfell and Turner, they describe social identity as part of ourself that comes from our group memberships, the we as much as the I. And that's the invisible stuff of belonging, the professions, the roles, and the communities that tell us who we are, and sometimes even who we're allowed to be. We can see this play out across our three goal setters. For Rebecca, her identity is going to shift. She's going to go from storyteller behind the scenes to what the one on the page. And what an exciting journey that's going to bring. That shift will bring her into new professional circles, and that's going to test how legitimate she will feel as a writer. For Darren, that belonging has already meant negotiating gatekeepers in a creative world through clients and collaborators and industry communities. He's also been balancing, you know, these dual identities of his own, being his own sales director and the lead artist. So he'll be learning that, you know, credibility isn't something that has to be handed down. It's something that is created and you build. Then for Jen, her social identity as a nurturer is both authentic and socially reinforced, a role that's deeply valued, but it's also bounded by gendered expectations. So her work will be to carry that same empathy and care into her business model without letting it become self-sacrifice. So each of those goals tells us that belonging is never static, is it? It's really negotiated, and how we navigate contexts of inclusion and recognition and legitimacy means that these things can be unevenly distributed. And how we negotiate that and the negotiation that we go through shapes how confidently we can move towards our goals. So I want you to think about your own ambitions and goals and ask yourself which groups and spaces are going to help you feel most seen in who you are going to become or who you're becoming, and where might you still be waiting for permission to belong, and sit with that. I think I come back to that idea of the goal is quite singular when it's in our head. It becomes something else when we have a conversation, but it becomes something entirely different when we think of goals as being not just personal, but social. Because our goals live within these connected networks and communities that either open doors or hold them shut. Understanding what context you're in is really where the growth begins. If you've been listening and thinking, I'd love to feel that kind of clarity about my own goals, I've created something to help you begin. Head to www.leelaange.co.uk/coaching and download your goal reflection log. It's not a checklist, but it's something I do with my clients before we start shaping strategy into action. So if you're serious about entering the new year with direction, confidence and a psychology-backed plan, this is where it starts. And when you're ready for deeper work, you'll find all the details of my one-to-one sessions there too. That's all for today. I'm Leela Ainge and this is Psychologically Speaking. If you've enjoyed this season so far, share it with someone who's setting their own 2026 goal and maybe start your 4-week check-ins together.